Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And the interesting thing is when you do conscious dreaming or active dreaming or shamanic dreaming, so you just, instead of just going to bed, you can just, like, it's the afternoon, you have a free afternoon, you close the door, you go to bed, but not for sleeping. And with the intention of staying half awake, and you re-enter the dream that you want to re-enter. Could be a positive dream, but it could also be a nightmare. And the interesting thing about a nightmare is that you can re-enter the nightmare, but now consciously, and you start to experience all the feelings in your body. So, for example, if there was a really crazy monster somewhere, like if it starts to approach you, you want to just like run away. But instead of that, you're staying conscious, and you're like, no, 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 I'm going to stay. I'm going to face this fear, literally.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss. In today's episode, we talk about a variety of topics, including Taoism practices and dreaming. Specifically, what is, you know, dream work or active dreaming, alternate dimensions, dream characters, and what interacting with your dreams can open up for you, right? So I'm really looking forward to this episode, particularly because I am interested in these topics, and I sense, or I can intuit, that all of you, especially those who are listening right now, are really going to enjoy this podcast episode. So if you like the work that we do, then make sure that you hit the subscribe button, or if you're on some other platform, hit the follow button, because what it does is it tells the algorithm that you enjoy and you like and you'd like to support our show. So make sure that you hit the subscribe button right now. And with that being said, I'd like to bring on our special guest for today, Jos Gosens. As a freelance journalist, Jos interviewed people from the Secretary General of NATO, Senior Director of Trends and Strategy at Philips, to presenters of BNR and Tour de France winners. He's always asked, what drives you? Why do you do what you do? What is your message? And the answers make him think. And in his search, Jos came into contact with older wisdom traditions through a mentor. He met the Taoist teacher Reinhard Elvind and was warned whether he wanted to take into account Reinhard's reality distortion field, which I'm sure we're going to get into. And it turned out to be exactly what Jos was looking for. So he started an interview with Reinhard, and that lasted for more than 7 years. It grew into a book about the Taoist view of sexuality, only for men, and an online platform where hundreds of men and thousands of women practice Taoist techniques to turn sexual energy into fuel for personal development. So I'm very excited to bring on Jos. I met him through a men's work training that I had attended as well by Sujit Ravindran. And as you can tell, you know, when you attend an event or maybe a ceremony, you tend to attract like-minded, similar-minded people who have you know, similar visions maybe, or similar value sets. And we connected that way, and we've sort of kept in touch ever since. So Jos, it's really nice to chat with you today.
Likewise, Aditya. Thank you. So nice to be here now.
Absolutely, absolutely. So for the audience, which part of the world are you joining from?
I'm currently in Santa Fe, New Mexico, but I'm originally from Holland, where the unpronounceable name comes from. And thank you for actually doing it right. So that's quite impressive.
Yeah, because, you know, I think in this global economy or maybe global environment that we're living in, we're all from different parts of the world. And a lot of times, especially if you have a name like mine or maybe like yours, it becomes a little bit difficult to pronounce, and you want to make sure that you get it right. And I'm glad that I was at least close to the right pronunciation. So really, really great to have you. You know, I've always wanted to ask this to you. How did it all begin for you? Where were you born and brought up?
Well, I was born in Holland, and I didn't have very particularly spiritual parents or like a spiritual family. I was always interested in success, the Western version of success, you know, like what makes that some people rise above, you know, they rise and all of a sudden they become the CEO of a great company. And I was always fascinated by that they really seemed to have something special. They were really, or they had a lot of energy, they had a lot of creativity, or they were above average intelligent. And I was always fascinated with those aspects. And I guess slowly I got more into the self-help scene. You know, Tim Ferriss was a big idol of mine. Who wrote the 7-hour, it's the 7-hour work week. Now I forgot the 4-hour work week. Yeah. Which really inspired the concept that we used to build my business later in life, which was also interesting. But yeah, I was a freelance journalist and I started interviewing people for different magazines. And one of the jobs I had was interviewing public speakers. So, you know, people who have something interesting to say, have a story, get hired by big companies or other organizations to tell about their vision on life. It was before TEDx, I think, but that was kind of the idea. And when I interviewed those people, it gave me an opportunity to interview a lot of different people and really shamelessly ask all the questions, you know, like, why this story? How did it start for you? What is your message? And weirdly, like, it was super inspiring, but also it taught me a big lesson, because after a while I saw that a lot of the people I really admired, when I really got more into their story and tried to get a more holistic picture, I saw that they also were just humans and that nobody had all the answers for me. And sometimes even I was a little bit disheartened maybe by seeing like, oh, this person is very successful, but in the way he is personally, or like in his health, or I could just see from very close, like, oh, that's less inspiring to me. So slowly I developed, I guess, a longing for a more holistic view of human success. And I guess naturally then that brought me to a more spiritual place until I met my first teacher. And I guess maybe for a lot of people it happens like a surprise, you know, the teacher appears when you're ready kind of feeling. And it was a Taoist teacher, someone who was literally at the marketplace in Amsterdam selling women's clothes, someone who's like in the middle of, you know, reality. And at the same time, a very interesting, yeah, kind of magical being. And it was him who first, I think, almost put me on the path in a sense of, I think I was always on the path. I think everyone's on the path. But who made me aware that you could also walk the path consciously.
So he was at that point selling women's clothes?
Yeah, he was just working at the market. And that's kind of classical in Taoism. Like, you know, you do your meditations in the cave, or you retreat from society. But then at some point you have to do the reality check. And then it's almost like a saying, like, you do that at the marketplace. Because, like, you know, it can't get more real than that. And he was doing that, and that inspired me as well. Is really grounded, down to earth kind of approach to spirituality.
Yeah. Got it. So, like, what sort of conversation led you to, at one point, meeting somebody in the marketplace to having, you know, like a conversation on maybe Taoism or something more? So, what was that thing about him mm-hmm. or the interaction that we were having with him that, you know, struck a nerve and then led you to maybe asking more questions about his background and his lineage.
Yeah. Well, somebody I had a mentor and I was asking him for a little guidance, and he said like, oh, maybe it's time for you to meet this person, Reinoud Edelveld. And what he said, and you mentioned it in my bio, he said like, but be aware, this man has a reality distortion field. And he said it kind of jokingly, but also I could feel like, oh, he means this or something. And now I know what he means. Like, I think with every wise being that you meet who speaks truth, like illusions get like, whoop, you know, you have to really adjust your perspective. And one of the first things what he told me when he took me like and set me down, he was like, okay, well, let's start with your view of what it means to be a human being, and let's paint like a little bit of more broader picture, including so he says like most people live in the outer reality, you know, in the manifest reality, but in every spiritual tradition, almost the first thing you learn, like, there's more than that, there's something beyond the physical, and then you enter the spiritual. And yeah, he was kind of drawing the whole Taoist concept of how you can work with that. And he also said like, just like you can learn how to walk in the manifest reality, you can go to the supermarket and back. You have to learn that one day. You can learn these same things in the spiritual realms. And he was kind of like, you're ready for that, so let's go. And it literally felt like Harry Potter, you know, like for the first time, all of a sudden Hagrid is in front of your door and saying that there's a school for wizards. And that's really how it felt. And I'm convinced there are schools for wizards. Or maybe to the people in your podcast, that doesn't sound too strange, but yeah.
Yeah. No, that's that really resonates, because as far as I understand, whether it's Taoism or maybe some other format of ancient practice like yoga or even, I guess, some other shamanic traditions, there usually is a tendency for the mentor or the teacher to be working in the most, mundane and ordinary circumstances and jobs, right? Because I recently interviewed somebody called Robert Peng, and his teacher was working in the boiler room of all places, in the midst of when China became communist, when that was happening. So obviously there was not freedom of speech, and everything was hidden, and you can't really out and about practice your Qigong or for that matter Tai Chi. And in those circumstances, he was able to connect with his teacher and also receive the knowledge and wisdom of Qigong. So my question to you is, what really appealed to you about Taoism at that point in your life?
I think for Taoism, like, I think every spiritual tradition has almost like a certain branding, if that makes sense. You know, like, it has certain effects on people that you are looking for or not. So I don't know, you can go into very deep meditation and maybe then you'll see someone who's just like peaceful and in bliss in meditative postures, and you're like, oh, I want that. That was not at all what I was looking for. I think what my teacher reflected to me and what I see in Taoism a lot is the art of enhancing your vitality. And so he was a very vital, alive man. He was in his 60s when I met him. And I was like, whoa, this dude is more intense than, you know, any of the older people I know. And I really was like, wow, I want that. I could see he had a lot of projects going on. Besides working at the market, he was also like having these own projects that developed, and a lot of people around him. And there was always something happening around him. And I was always like, oh, wow, okay. This vitality, this glow, you know, like being just abundant in your life energy. That's what I really wanted. And yeah, I guess that was our connection as well, because he was kind of going there first. He said like, okay, in the Taoist tradition, we train the vitality first. And if you do that well, it becomes so abundant that it starts to create pressure and it starts to steam. They call that cooking rice. and that the steam will become like more awareness or more chi. The heart starts to open, and when that harmonizes and starts to grow and becomes abundant, your shen or your spirit starts to open or awaken. All those words don't really do justice, but you know, something starts to happen, something spiritual starts to happen. But very much from like, okay, you have to like start at the vitality level. We have to increase your life force. And yeah, what his approach to that was the sexual energy. So he really went straight to the source, you can say, of where vitality comes from, you know. And two parents have sex, a child comes, and everyone who sees a baby knows like, oh wow, that's the most vital thing almost there is. And yeah, he kind of said like, well, the Taoists know how to harness the same concept that the universe uses of two opposite forces marrying, creating a third force. And you can also, instead of just having sex with a partner, you can also do this in yourself meditatively. So the sexual energy, you just go there in meditation, you awaken it a little bit. It's not like something really explosive or fancy, or you know, a lot of people think of like, oh, it must be tantra, you must have like 4-hour orgasms and la la la. A lot is possible. I mean, all that stuff is possible, but if you just want to use that creative energy of your sexuality, it can be just meditative practice. And that's what I started to learn. And yeah, and that really, I did that for 10 years. That became the book that you mentioned, The Techniques for Men. A lot of people know Mantak Chia in the Taoist scene. And he wrote a couple of books together with other people about these techniques. And this was kind of our own version of that, and refinement based on a different lineage and practice of a lot of people who like added and like refined it. And yeah, we made that into a book and online courses. Yeah.
Got it. And so I think at least one of the things, or maybe two of the things that you practice is Negong and Nedan, right? So what are these two practices?
Yeah, also Taoist practices. Nedan Gong or Nedan Gong literally means internal alchemy practice skill. And yeah, the idea of that, you know, that we are kind of like a soup with all these ingredients. And for a lot of people, that's just what it is. Like, okay, I'm this kind of soup and I'm just going to live this life because it is what it is and I can't change that. But in all these spiritual traditions, what I find so inspiring is that that's the first thing. Like, no, you are not what you are. You are an infinite possibility. That's who you are. And now you can use this life to manifest that unmanifested potential. And yeah, the name, I guess, that the Chinese chose for that is like, how do you transform something? So you use an alchemy, you know, you can use external alchemy. I don't know, you can turn one thing into another, and in yourself, you can also do that. And yeah, there's just a tradition of thousands and thousands of years of people who experimented with that and got wisdom and lineages. And so I practiced that for a long time. And that's also when the dreaming woke up.
Amazing. Because I've read the book, at least one of the books by Mantak Chia a couple of years back, and that's where I came across the term of microcosmic orbit, right? And the way I think he explains it is to visualize that the energy is moving up your spine, but from the back, and it goes all the way up. This is called the Pei Hui, right? Pei Hui, and then it goes all the way down, right? And then later on, when I studied Kriya Yoga, I noticed that in the yogic traditions, there's also a microcosmic orbit going on, except at least in that particular lineage, it is the other way around, where you start from the front and then you visualize like a golden waterfall going down your back. But I found it was pretty interesting that, you know, both traditions speak about the importance of circulating your energy around your personal orbit that sort of mimics the universe around you.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also fascinating to me if you study in more traditions that you see all these overlaps, but also very confusing, like contradictions, and it's hard to do. And I think, it needs a little wisdom to also, or humbleness maybe, to, if you're studying a system, to just like, okay, I don't know anything, I'm just gonna try this system for a while and see, you know. But most people's tendency, and so many teachers warn me for this, is that they think like, oh, I learned this there, I'm gonna apply this to this, what I'm now learning in Kriya Yoga, or, you know, in some Tibetan like breathing exercise. And then it can become really messy. But the cosmic orbit is one of those things you see everywhere. There are a few energetic channels that you can just, you know, like if you go a little bit deeper in the system, they're there. And that to me was always very comforting, because I don't know if you have the same experience, but if I enter a new system, there's also, you know, it has to kind of win your trust. So then when I at some point see like, oh, okay, like here, there's a kind of like common truth there, you know, like these energetic systems, if you study them by yourself, at some point you will just come to a certain conclusion, because it's just an inner science in that sense. And with the cosmic orbit, I find it fascinating. For example, I learned it as well, like meditatively go through the whole energetic system, through the back, up, and then down, and that's that thing. But then in yoga later, there's exercises where you like make your back like curl like that and like this. But everyone can try. If you do this 10 times, like make your back like this, and like, okay, you get energized. You totally get energized, because you're just stimulating those channels in a very simple way. I love those overlaps, but I also had a lot of difficulty with that. And I was really glad that some teachers, and specifically Damo Mitchell, who is in the Taoist scene, a big teacher, is really warning. He says like never mix systems, and also don't try to understand. For example, if we do this Taoist meditation, and then people say like, oh, are we activating like the third chakra? And he says like, let's not talk about the chakras. It's a different system, a different language. It takes a long time before you actually know what you're talking about. It's easy to think that you get the concept, but where you experientially know, for example, the whole chakra system, like I'm practicing for a long time, I can't say that I experientially know how the whole thing works. I've read books, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
No, I agree 100%. It's one thing to say that, you know, this chakra is this color, and this is the element associated with that, and this is the sound associated with that, and that's great, and you can make a nice infographic or a good chart, mm-hmm. but at a certain point, you need to experience it yourself.
Exactly.
And maybe you might not associate it with that color, right? Maybe you'll have a different association, mm-hmm. but at least that is your personal subjective experience.
Exactly.
That is worth a lot compared to reading a book and just, you know, like theoretically associating XYZ with a particular energy vortex that you can't even see.
Yeah, right? Totally.
So it's very, very interesting. So talk to us about, how did you stumble upon dream training?
Mm.
How did you come across path of working with your dreams or exploring your dreams?
Well, I guess it's what I like. One of my teachers said to me was like, you know, if you were entering this more magical realm, the internal realm, where nothing is fixed and everything's more symbolic, a lot of people, not everyone, like half of the people are like, oh yeah, I understand that world, you know, but a lot of people are like, what is that? Even some, I know people like on the spiritual path for years, and they're still feeling like, yeah, but I never really experienced like what some people say, you know, that energetic reality where everything's magical. But my teacher said like, well, the closest thing that is in the awareness of a lot of people is dreams. In dreams, a lot of things are possible and nothing really makes sense, or it makes sense in a way that doesn't make sense when you're awake. You know, that feeling when you wake up like, oh, this was perfect. And an hour later, you're like, ah, the whole reality doesn't make sense. But he told me, like, yeah, these dreams, in Holland, we have a saying like, dreams are tricking you. And that's almost like a saying, like, I'll never believe your dreams. It's a very, like, you know, like, we're down to earth and it's all nonsense and kind of way of seeing things. So he was helping me to, like, pay attention to your dreams. And I was always a vivid dreamer at, yeah, all kinds of dreams. And I started paying more attention. And then it became very clear that my dream world was interacting with my real life. And not just in a way of like processing, you know, like, oh, I had a busy day and I dream, like, you know, like almost when you clean up your hard drive, that also happens, of course. But then I, also saw like, no, there's almost like a poetic thread that goes through both worlds where my dream reality is affecting my waking reality and the other way around. And yeah, we started practicing lucid dreaming in the Taoist training that I did, which included like waking up in the middle of the night, setting your alarm and doing a little practice in the night. So at 3 a.m., everyone woke up. We did a little practice outside, and then at 4 a.m., everyone went back to bed. And then the assignment was, okay, now try to slip into a lucid dream. And because you have two ways of getting into a lucid dream, you can either fall asleep and then wake up just enough so you become lucid, which is a hard thing to do for a lot of people. But the other way around is like fall asleep with awareness, and then you're also crossing that barrier of sleeping awareness, the hypnagogic state, if I'm saying it correctly. And there is a lot of there. That's actually the realm of deep meditation, you could say. But that now you're horizontal and now you're getting a free pass. So that's how I experience it. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to sit for this for like an hour to get that deep. But like, if you fall asleep aware, you get there almost like a free ride. And there's a lot of healing there possible.
Yeah. I definitely, you know, studied that we have different phases of sleep, right? And there's one phase where we're totally in a very deep state of non-dream state, so to speak, right? And so I guess in a way you're trying to finish that portion off, wake up at that time where you're able to directly go into that dream phase of your sleep. And I have read that that is possible also if you nap in the afternoon. Like afternoon, you skip to that part and you go into that dream state straight away, which is why a lot of times when people nap, they're already dreaming, right? And then they wake up and like, whoa, I was enjoying such a nice dream. Why did I wake up? But that definitely makes a lot of sense. So to you, what are dreams? Are dreams, because there are many different viewpoints, and maybe all of them are right. But some people say that dreams are essentially your subconscious mind creating symbols and characters and interactions to make sense of life and what you experience during that day, right? Some people say that, you know what, dreams are actually different characters and entities and beings and spiritual masters who are themselves coming and interacting with you, because that is the most, I guess, believable plane of them getting into contact with you, right? Because like, if you had to meet like an ascended master, if he or she comes in this physical world, you'll be dumbfounded and you probably not believe that that person is there, right? Or maybe if you've lost someone recently and they come in front of you, you'll think, you know, because we're in a plane of disbelief. Anything that is not mundane, not ordinary, it's very hard to believe that. But at least in the dream state, it's more possible. So what are your thoughts on that? Or maybe the third thing is, that I've heard, the third theory is that in the dream state, we are essentially interacting with ourselves, but ourselves who are living lives in an alternate plane or a parallel dimension. where we are having multiple parallel realities taking place at the same time. And just for a glimpse, we get to experience that particular life. And then we come back to this life in the waking state. So what are your thoughts on that?
Great question. And good options you're giving me as well. And I have to credit my dream teacher, Robert Moss, who's an amazing shamanic dream teacher. I would highly recommend anyone who's interested in dream work to study with him, or at least look him up or read his books. I think he wrote over 20 books about the topic. And he was the first man who really pointed out to me that he would say, I guess, this is how I understand him, that all three are true, what you're saying, and even more. And getting more educated about your dreams and more like skillful, you can start to distinguish them better, and then they become also more useful. And that's what he taught me really well. He is a very practical teacher. He's like, dreaming is not just for like spiritual, like some experience or whatever. It's also that. But he says, like, no, it's super practical. It's a tool that helps you navigate through your life. And if you don't have your dreams, he says, like, in some traditions, they say, like, you're not in touch with your soul. So you can't navigate well if you're not in touch with your dreams. And there are ways also to get your dreams back. For if anyone is listening, like, oh, okay, like, how do I, is that possible? Yeah. Has a lot to do with your inner magical child. Symbolically, like, you can, like, all children dream, and if you ask them, it's fun to do, actually, like, ask a child what did you dream last night, and they tell you very normally, like, oh yeah, just like a pink hippo was on the carnival with me, and I was flying around, and we went to have ice cream, and we went there, and then I saw grandma, and grandma was not looking so well. And then, so that's a lot of information, and some of it is just pure beautiful imagination. But for example, a dream teacher would say, like, oh, grandma was not looking so well. That's actually information that you really want to hear. And he has these five questions that you can ask about any dream that makes it very quickly almost funny that you're seeing, like, oh, it seemed like such a random, like, weird train of thoughts. But if you ask the right questions, you can see, like, oh, you can always derive new information from it. And one of the questions is, when you wake up, like, how did you feel? Like, how does the dream make you feel? Very important, because it puts context around the whole feeling. You can dream a whole horror scenario, but if you wake up cheerful, it might have a totally different message for you than if you really feel, you know what I mean? So that's really how you can, that puts perspective on the dream. But also the reality check. Is there anything from this dream that you recognize, either in your physical life or in your mind, past, present, or future? And that's a really interesting question, because, for example, in that pink hippo dream with the grandmother who wasn't looking very well, obviously then the question is, like, oh, okay, pink hippo, no, I don't really know. Oh, even though we were planning to go to the zoo next week, so then that's, like, interesting information. But then, grandma's not looking so well. Oh, okay. That could be real. Let's give her a call today. And that's, so you go to these questions. And the last one is always, like, what action plan do I commit to this dream, to honor the dream? And also as a practice to make them a little more important. So, your dreams start to, like, it's almost like your dream makers start to get the message, like, oh, he's listening, you know? And an action plan could be as simple as, like, okay, I heard the dream, I'm writing it down, that's it, I'm noting it, that's the action. But it could also be, okay, I need to do a little research. Because sometimes, I don't know, you're sitting in a Greek conference you're in a medieval village, and someone is telling you something, and you're like, what village was that? And what was he telling me? And the beautiful thing is, and that might be less familiar for a lot of people, but yeah, like, if you start paying attention, you can actually see that, and you start researching it, and you start seeing, like, oh, you're actually dreaming things that you can't know. So there's definitely part of psychological processing that's, you have to kind of recognize that as like, oh, okay, I see that. I, you know, if you ask those questions, you see like, okay, this happened yesterday. Now I see like I'm processing it in my dreams. But then there are these other options that you gave, beautiful options. And then if you pay more attention, everyone's connected in that way. I mean, we're all walking miracles. We're all like, if you zoom in at one little particle of us, you come to empty space, and empty space connects all of us beyond time. And anyway, it's the mind can't comprehend it, but in the dream world, you come close to that. And yeah, it's fascinating to learn to navigate that a little bit.
Very, very interesting. Is it possible to draw too much meaning from the interpretation of a dream? And what I mean by that is, I'm sure maybe you're part of some Facebook groups also, which are centered around dreams. And somebody posts something, hey, you know what? I saw a serpent last night in my dreams. And then you have, you know, like five people saying, you know what? That's bad. That's a bad omen. That's negative, right? And then you got another group of people that say, you know what? Serpent and certain traditions are actually good. It's positive. And it's an awakening that you're going through. And in China, this happens. And in India, this happens, right? And, you know, some people might have certain interpretations about seeing a crow. And some people say, no, that's a wonderful. That's a crow is very intelligent, and it's signifying some new idea or something that's going to get launched, right? So do you feel that there might be too much meaning drawn from the interpretation of a dream? Or maybe do you feel that the person who experienced the dream can have a more subjective, nuanced interpretation based on where they are in their journey? Or what are your thoughts around interpreting a dream in this format?
Wow, good question. Yes, I agree totally. I think the core of that issue is, and I guess you went there a little bit, is like no one should ever tell you what your dream means. So don't look at a dream dictionary. Don't like just go by like, oh, in India, you know, the snake is Kundalini, so you must have like a Kundalini awakening in 2 months or whatever, you know, you better get ready. And that's the beauty of the real dream traditions of the native, all the native cultures. They knew that very well. Like it's your subjective reality, but it interacts with the physical objective reality. So yes, you can attach way too much meaning to a dream. Especially if you're just going to ask like, oh, I saw like, this hippo, and I'm gonna look, and the hippo says like, oh, it's very, I don't know, you need to be more grounded. And then like, okay, that's it. But what you can do though is in the process, you can ask feedback on your dream. But what you first should do is like therefore know your feelings very well, because that grounds you in your reality, and then do your reality check. And then also ask yourself the question, like, what do I want to know? What is my question about this dream? So for example, I saw my grandmother in my dream. Like my question could be very specific. Like, why was my grandmother in my dream? That's the only question I have. Then you can ask someone else, your partner or whatever, like you tell them the dream. And then you can ask like, okay, like, what is your reflection? And then the courtesy is to say like, okay, if you give reflection, you always say like, if it were my dream. So you're not saying like, oh, your dream means this and this and this, because then you're taking away the authority of the dreamer. But if you say it in a way like, if it were my dream, I would be interested in, or if it were my dream, I would definitely like take the warning of ill health of my grandmother seriously. Or something, and the interesting thing is this always gives so much more information if someone else reflects on your dream. And then it could totally change your perspective, because someone else might see something in the hippo that you totally missed. But then still, it's just a new lead for you to find your own truth with that. And the interesting thing is that all these native cultures say like dreaming is about waking up. So it's not about just projecting psychological concepts on these random dreams that you had, but it's about actually waking up. Like it's a tool for evolving your consciousness. And that's also why it should be practical. And I like that about Robert Moss as a teacher, that he's saying like, we're not just doing this for fun. Like it should have meaning in your real life. And it's about bringing the gifts from that realm to this realm, and that's what he calls magic, the art of magic. And yeah. Well, maybe I can give you a very practical example of like how I use dreams like practically for my own life, and how dreams guided certain decisions in my life. But one of the things was, intentional dreaming. You go to bed with an intention. You write down your intention, a question, and you say like, okay, what I would like to know, I would like guidance on this topic. And I had like a work transformation. I was at a crossroads and I was like, what do I need to do? Do I need to like quit my job? Do I need to stay? What's the timing? You know, like, and I just asked like, what do I need to know about this? And I had a very interesting dream. I fell asleep, and then in the dream it was totally black, but I got a text message, and the text message just said like in a few lines, it says like, when you are in Holland, when I was back in the Netherlands, there will be a next assignment for you. The King's Architect is working on it. And that was it. And I woke up with just that message, but it was very strong and clear. It was very obvious, like, okay, what does this mean? And then later it started to evolve. And I knew in the back of my mind, like, oh, at some point when I'm back in Holland, there is something waiting for me. There's a new assignment. So I just took that seriously. And yes, it happened. So when I was there, it showed that it literally like got real. And that's one of the other things that the shamans say, that like way more in our dreams than we think is about the future to come. It's either our own mind preparing us for future scenarios, or literally information from the future that's just coming in, because in the dream space, there is no time, if that makes sense. And that's, you have fascinating stories about that. And like, if you start paying attention to it, you can literally see like, oh, I dreamt about this person, la la la, 2 days later, this person is calling me. Or, but also very, very specific. And that's also an example from my life, when a certain death of a certain family member was predicted almost to the day, which still is crazy to me if I say that, to like, wow, how is that possible? But there was a dream, and it was very obvious that some wise person said like, okay, this and this person is going to die on this and this, and this and this phase of the year. And it happened. And also we acted because we knew that information. When this person became ill, we took it very seriously, because we knew like, okay, this was the dream. And yeah, I had like a couple of dreams in my life that were so obvious to me, and that totally like cured me of my not believing. And now I take it seriously. If I have a clear dream, and the feelings will tell you how to look at it. If your intuition will know like, this is a real message. And it, sometimes you wake up and like, oh, this is not super important. And then usually it isn't super important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very, very profound, because you did mention that in the dream time, or in the dream place, right, there's no time. And the future is the present, is the past. And so if you look at it from that vantage point, then even the future that we are going to experience is actually happening in the present. And so it helps us access some data or some information from that stream, future stream, into the present moment, right? So my question to you is, do you believe that dreams might also be providing us a glimpse into a parallel dimension or a parallel reality? Because my personal theory is that there are like countless galaxies, and there are countless universes as well. We can't even estimate. And there's like, most of our known reality is based on dark matter and dark energy, right? And I think only just 4% is what the known universe, right? So a lot of what the universe is, we don't even know what it is and when it is even, right? So in saying that, my theory is that based on a decision that we take, we create two versions of realities, right? For example, the yo's that decided that, you know what, he didn't have time for the podcast today. He had some other urgent work to handle. So one version of you is in this reality. Maybe another version of you is where I say, you know what, sure, let's just reschedule it to some other day, right?
Yeah, next week.
Or the week after that.
He's just sitting in a jacuzzi somewhere relaxing.
Yeah. And you're creating multiple different realities, each in a different timeline or maybe a different dimension altogether, right? And maybe through your dreams, you're glimpsing into that reality and maybe using your visualization, jumping from one reality to another. I don't even know if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
But during a mushroom trip once, I realized that I went into it from one dimension, but I came out of it from a different, you know, reality altogether. So that was like, so that sort of planted the seed for me to try to figure out or get a glimpse into what the true nature of reality
so
is.
So, right? Aditya, I'm now seeing came from a different dimension. Or did you get back to the dimension you were originated in? We don't know. Maybe this
is like so beyond words.
The other Aditya is still in the mushroom trip. He's like banging on the glass walls like in Interstellar. Have you seen Interstellar?
I've seen it, but I honestly, you know, these are the type of movies are so complex, you got to watch it multiple times to even comprehend. So I feel that I need to watch it one more time to, but I remember that part where he's
at some point he's in between
his daughter, right?
In between dimensions
and he's
exactly. trying to help himself in another dimension to save the world. So he's like banging on the walls of that dimension, and then a book falls out of the bookshelf, which you saw in the beginning, that just, and then you see like, oh, how do synchronicities actually work, you know, like are we trying to help ourselves from other dimensions?
And right. I remember that scene. Yes, that makes sense. Correct.
Yeah. And is your question like, do I think that could be real, that we are in a multiple or maybe even endless dimensions? And
Are we in endless dimensions? And do dreams somehow help us at least get a glimpse into some other dimension? Yeah. Or is there something that's being passed down onto us?
Well, my teachers definitely told me this. So that answer is definitely yes. They would say like, yes, there are parallel. They say like a lot of people know the concept about past lives, but they say like there is no such thing as past life. So there's just parallel lives. So your past lives it's all happening now. You know what I mean? In that sense. And I can't understand that with my mind, but some part of me is like, yeah, it does also make sense in a weird way. So I don't know if someone ever did like regression therapy where someone kind of guides you maybe into like a past life experience, and then you can do something there, like heal something, you can forgive someone, or you can like release anger or fear, or like come to terms with a certain thing that happened, and then you come out of the meditation, and then no one knows like was that real or not, what is even real. But then what a lot of people experience is that it has a tremendous effect on their life. So their subjective reality changed completely. And so it has a very healing effect. And that's the same with dreams. Like if you start to be more aware of your dreams, for example, nightmares are fascinating. Did you ever have a repetitive nightmare, a nightmare that came back more often?
Honestly, touch wood, that experience is not part of my current journey right now.
Okay. Well, I had one as a kid.
Not one. I've not had recurring. I'm sure I have nightmares.
No,
not
of
like
course.
Recurring, thematic-based.
No, I had a repetitive one that literally came back in my childhood all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is when you do conscious dreaming or active dreaming or shamanic dreaming, so you just, instead of just going to bed, you can just like, it's the afternoon, you have a free afternoon, you close the door, you go to bed, but not for sleeping. And with the intention of staying half awake, and you re-enter the dream that you want to re-enter. Could be a positive dream, but it could also be a nightmare. And the interesting thing about a nightmare is that you can re-enter the nightmare, but now consciously, and you start to experience all the feelings in your body. So for example, if there was a really crazy monster somewhere, like if it starts to approach you, you want to just like run away. But instead of that, you're staying conscious, and you're like, no, I'm going to stay.
I'm going to face this fear, literally. And what happens then is fascinating, because it's always starts consciously. You're like, oh, I'm just imagining this, you know, like now I'm just imagining myself facing this monster. But then you'll see that things will happen that you can't really imagine because they're new. You know, your imagination always exaggerates what you already know. But now something happens like that can completely, for example, the monster transforms and it embraces you. You had no idea. Like, what? I thought the monster wanted to eat me, and now it embraces you. And then the monster becomes you. Like, slowly the monster starts to become your skin. It can be an all like vivid, crazy experience. And then you feel like, oh, and then what you're doing, kind of you're navigating the inner energetic world. And this could be a lost part of your soul, a lost part of your energy body. And you're reclaiming it. And then slowly it merges with you again. And you're literally healing yourself. And that's a core of dream work that's invaluable and fascinating. You can do tremendous healing in your dreams. And this is an extreme example, but you can even do it like, okay, I have a presentation next week. I'm nervous. Let me lie down. I'm going to dream this presentation. And then you make it a healing experience. And just like that therapy session or meditation, you come out of it changed. And I don't know how it works, but it works. That's my conclusion.
Yeah, this sort of reminds me of, I'm not sure if you heard about the Aghori sect of tantrics in India. Have you heard of them?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of them, yeah.
So basically they're of the belief that, and this is based on my limited knowledge, but part of what they want to achieve is these siddhis, right? These supernatural abilities. And they are willing to go through any sort of difficulty, penance, harsh conditions in order to transcend the duality of life and reach a state of non-duality, to the extent that they are able to like confront death also. So they go to the Ganga, the river Ganga, and they sometimes pull out corpses and they meditate close to it, right? Because to them, they want to transcend everything, anything that would be considered disgusting, vile, scary, horrendous. They want to embrace that. Now, that's a very extreme way of looking at things, but that's what they do. And the other example I thought of was like a cold shower in the morning. Right? Like nobody likes to go into a cold shower, but every time you get into a cold shower, you do maybe a minute or maybe two, your relationship to cold shower, and for that matter, challenges in general changes. So next time you experience a challenge on a subconscious level, you're a much more resilient, strong and courageous person, mainly because of those small, like you mentioned, right? Like hugging the monster metaphorically is actually good for you, because then the monster sublimates and changes into something that's loving, like a rabbit or maybe a puppy dog.
Exactly. It's crazy. And I love what you're saying. And I had some crazy, beautiful healing experience that I never thought would happen. And one of them was I was chased and attacked by cats, like a couple nights in a row. And I didn't, like, that was very, like, the feeling told me, like, something is being told to me. Like, I haven't been in touch with cats. I'm not thinking about cats. This is not just my psyche trying to reorganize a few things or process. All of a sudden, like, this 40 cats would just, like, viciously attack me. And I couldn't shake them off my arms. And it's like, whoa. And then my dream teacher, Robert Moss, taught me, like, you know, you can ask reflection. And someone said, like, well, if it were my dream, I would try to see if the cats can become my ally instead of my enemy. And, you know, like that was the last thing that where my mind was at that moment. I was more like thinking, like, what's happening? Something not right in my life, you know? And it was such an interesting change of perspective. And I did the lucid dreaming. So I went to bed at daytime and just like went half asleep and then re-entered a dream. That's a little bit of a shamanic trick. You fall asleep a little bit with a very vivid image of the dream you had, like something that emotionally vibrates, and could be a detail, but you hold that in front of you kind of internally, and then you kind of let it unfold. You don't consciously try to do something, but you have a very clear intention. My intention was like, I want to see if they can become my allies, but I'm not controlling the dream. So I'm just slipping into it, kind of like dozing off, and the cats, okay, there are the cats, and all of a sudden I can feel them again, you know, like they're eating my arms and they're like viciously attacking me. And I'm just all of a sudden like in the dream, and I didn't even plan this. It was just like, okay, the cats can totally devour me. Like I am their food. That became the feeling. And it was a fascinating experience. The cats started to eat me and everything calmed down. And I it's hard for me to really pinpoint like what changed, but I woke up from that dream so calm and so peaceful. And it was almost like there was this feline energy in me that was just like going crazy apparently, and very like self sabotaging. And it calmed down, it integrated again. And yeah, like my teacher told me, like it's good to then do something with a dream to like honor it. So I decided to draw the cat, and it became a very regal, beautiful image of a cat. And it's still next to my bed, and it feels like an ally, a power animal, a shamanic power animal. Like I made peace with the energy of cats, whatever that means, but it's powerful.
That's very interesting. A couple of things. When you shared that, what imagery came to my mind was the scene from Batman. I'm not sure you've seen that part where he is, I think, in the formative years in the cave, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you have thousands and thousands of bats that are coming into him, and he's so scared of the bats. Mm-hmm. And then he has his inner voice that says, "Embrace your fears, Bruce." Mm. And then he stands up, and then he becomes Batman, right? Mm. So the power of the bat, which initially was fear to him, has now become his identity and his strength. And a couple of months back, I interviewed somebody who is a ayahuasca, you know, author who writes about ayahuasca, mm-hmm. and his journeys in South America. And he said that it's very possible that when you consume that, you get the energies of different animals, mm-hmm. from the jungle, especially mm-hmm. the jaguar. Mm-hmm. The jaguar mm-hmm. spirit becomes one with you. And he was like, at one point, I really felt like eating the chickens.
Oh, wow. yeah, that's known.
And I felt like I had a deal of dagger, yeah. like fangs inside. Yeah. So it's very, very...
That's very known. And that's maybe the... in the shamanic realms, it's very known. If you work with power animals, it changes you. So working with Mother Bear is a very like good power animal to connect with in the beginning, because she's very protective and very like warm and... But yeah, people describe that it changed them, and that they crave honey and, you know, like sweet things and berries and stuff like that. And the other way around, shamans use it if they want to connect to a certain energy, the energy of a spirit animal. They start eating the food. They start like behaving like the animal. I'm not really into that. That for me, I don't. Maybe that's just not where I'm at. But I don't see the practicality of that. You know what I mean? There are loads, but I don't see them personally. But I love the way of dreams can heal you. That's super powerful. And the other thing I really like is how it can enhance the synchronicity in your life. So it becomes a fun play of all these signs, and you know, like you're more in touch with the wonders of life almost, because if you're not, life can seem so fixed and so, you know, that kind of cubicle kind of feeling like, oh, I'm stuck. But if the moment when you take your dream seriously, even sitting in a cubicle all day can become magical, because, you know, you dreamt about a certain thing, a certain symbol, and all of a sudden you see a colleague in the cubicle next to you drawing a rabbit on the while he's having a call, and also, you know, like, ah,
that makes sense.
I'm in a constant conversation with God. That's the feeling that it gives me.
I've got a question for you, but before that, I have an observation for our listeners, people listening to the show right now, because I see a lot of people remembering their past lives, right? Maybe they work with like a therapist, mm-hmm. or maybe they read a book and they remember past lives. But how come in everyone's past life they're either a pharaoh or a queen? How come no one's a beggar?
Totally. Yeah.
Or a paraplegic, or somebody who's faced a lot of challenges. How come everyone's a queen and a king? This is a rhetorical question.
It's a good question. I always ask that. I even went to a therapist, and my ex-girlfriend went there first, and she was an Egyptian high priestess, And she saw this whole life. Then I went to the therapist like 2 weeks later, and then I got the same story. And then we called her later. It's like, do you know, like, that you're telling us exactly the same story? And what is that? You know, like, and she seemed like a very sincere human being. But that for me showed that, I guess, this realm of imagination and the more energetic realms, you have to stay grounded. You can't just say like, oh, in the past life I was this. Plus that a lot of teachers say to me, like, leave those past lives alone. It's about this life. This is your opportunity. Yeah. This is the one, you know?
Very true. Now, my question is, can two or more people decide that they will meet and become lucid in a dream together? You know, just like the movie Inception. You know, like five people sitting, they're like, tonight we're going to be here, we're going to meet, and we're going to work together, maybe do some healing together in our dream.
Yeah. Well, yes, from my personal experience, yes. So all the teachers say yes, but I can also say personal experience. I had a friend or have a friend who's a very strong dreamer. And she and I agreed to do a little test, like come to my dream and do something very obvious. And then the next day, if it works, like I'll report back to you, you know? And it worked so well, it scared me. I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought she was in the room. It literally felt like, oh my God, you're way too close. What is happening here? And like, I woke up from a small part of the dream where she gave me red socks. It was a very, very particular symbol. And I called her next day. I said, like, what happened? And she told me, like, yeah, it was something with socks. And, you know, so we shared a part of the dream. And a lot of people actually, when you're very much in love and you're very with your partner, like aligned, and your hearts are very open, and you have, you know, you're very merged together. And I think a lot of couples experience that they can be in the same dream at the same time. But unfortunately, because we don't pay attention to our dreams, we forget. Because if you wake up at 3 a.m., that's the moment when you just should like write it down, a few words. And then the next morning you need a little concrete thing, and then you can slip back into the dream and it all comes back. But if you don't have anything, you just wake up and you do your breakfast and that was it. And so that's the main thing. If you pay more attention and see it as like, oh, like people pay a lot of money to go to like clairvoyant people and talk to their guides and blah, whatever. But why should you like ask other people to talk to your guides? Like you are being guided, but you're just not listening. So one of the aspects to honor that is just to like pay attention to your dreams. Understand that the language is symbolic and poetic. It's very good for your poetic health, if that makes sense. Because it won't tell you go left or right. Sometimes it can. If you ask very specifically your attention, like, do I need to marry this woman? Yes or no? Your dream can be very... because it goes beyond the shadow, or it is almost a shadow. So what you're not seeing in your waking life is like, maybe you're repressing some really difficult decision. In your dream, it will just show you like in a very interesting way, sometimes hilarious, like, oh my goodness, did you really need to like make it that obvious to me, you know? but sometimes it can be very poetic, and the joy of that is also, it helps you to evolve your consciousness, because our practical minds is just such a small aspect of what we can be as a human being. And if you start tracking your dreams, it activates all the other parts of your humanness. So all of a sudden you're like, oh, why a blue butterfly? Why a blue butterfly? Your mind can't make sense of it. But if you open up your heart and you calm down, and all of a sudden it starts to make sense, like intuitively. And then these insights can come. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I am the butterfly. Why am I not enjoying that I was a caterpillar and I worked so hard and now I'm a butterfly and only running to the next phase? I'm not even enjoying that I have become the butterfly. You know, like we're always looking to the next phase. That could be an insight. And all of a sudden you realize that's a beautiful spiritual guidance that you gave yourself in a dream. And then you're just taking the gift.
Right. So if your friend can come in your dreams and give you like red socks, right? Yeah, like you mentioned. So if that is possible, then isn't it also possible that somebody who does not have your right intentions, like dark warlord or maybe a wizard or somebody who wants to attack you, like psychic warfare can also come in your dreams and create havoc. So what are your thoughts on that? And how can somebody who is indulging in dream work now, who's getting into it, how can they protect their, you know, how can they protect their dreams so that it's a place of sanctity and nobody can harm them?
Yeah, good question.
Because then it opens portals. It opens like totally. A lot of portals, right?
You're right. And there's different levels to dreaming. And
okay.
And so it depends how deep you're going. So if you're just right. like going in your own subconscious, you're in your own subconscious and the monsters are probably your own fears.
Yeah.
But sometimes very consciously, you can, what you say, dream portals, you can go into a portal. And usually you have a guide. So that's one of the things that a lot of shamans teach. Like you start with getting an anchor point. So you create in your dream space, or you find in your dream space a point of reference. It could be a beautiful tree or a place near a river where you feel calm and nature is protective around you. Or you can have your own cave, and you always start your dreaming from there. So you have a point of reference. So you can navigate, if that makes sense. And then you start making contact with guides. So you can politely, just like you would like make friends with, you know, in waking life, you can politely invite or like look up, yeah, like animal spirits, for example. And just if that feels very far fetched, then it can just be an image, for example, the bear, just an image that works for you of a bear. You hold it in your mind and you fall asleep a little bit. So you go to that in-between state between awake and sleep. And you just hold that image and you just see how it unfolds. And you can have the intention, like, I wanna say hello to this bear, whatever that means. And you will always be surprised, is my experience. If you give that a little bit of attention, you will always be surprised, like, wow. And something happens and it's very personal. So that's, I guess, the start that a lot of shamans teach, like find a point of reference so you feel safe there. So always in your dream, you can always decide like, oh, this is getting too crazy. Where's my cave? You know, you go
right.
back. And yeah, get in touch with guides and be friendly to them. And just like the normal world, like, and I guess also like this world, like the world is not that dangerous. Like you can, if you travel a lot, one of the things you realize, like most people have good intentions, you know, like it's only certain places at certain times where you shouldn't be. And that's the same in the dream world. Like you can get there, but it's rare, you know, that you find you make the wrong turn. But usually it's just making a decision that's not very wise. If I go in certain areas in LA at night by myself, wearing a very expensive watch, yeah, that's just not a very, very clever thing to do. And I guess there are certain things in the energetic world that are also there. And one of the things I would say from personal experience, never use willpower. So never think like, oh, I'm gonna find my, I don't know what you want to find my, like,
by willpower, do you mean like Will Smith power? Or?
Yeah, no, yeah, don't, exactly.
Yeah, that was my bad joke for the day.
I think it's actually pretty good. Yeah, no, don't use your willpower. That's good advice.
great. Yeah. Awesome. So as we come to a close for today's session, what are some best practices when it comes to maintaining a dream journal? Because you did speak about sort of you know, recording mm-hmm. your dreams, right? Mm-hmm. As you have those mm-hmm. dreams. So mm-hmm. how does one get started with that?
Yeah, I guess have a dream journal. That's one. So put it next to your bed and make it very easy to access. Because everyone knows that if you're awake a little bit, it's so easy to not do it. So make it as easy as possible. And different things for different people work. So I love to write in a notebook, just like with pen, because it has a certain feel to it. There were also people who had their phone and they wrote an email to themselves, which is also fascinating, because then you wake up and usually you can even forget that you wrote something down at night. And then you're at your work or at your desk and you're opening your email. You have an email from yourself from that dream state, which makes it all of a sudden very real. Like, I got a message from another dimension, and it can make, like, it doesn't make any sense. All of a sudden you're like at your desk and it says like, in the Colosseum, fighting lions could fly, Earth opened and I fell through the planet into a black hole. And there you are at your desk, like, okay, what's this? And then you ask the questions, what are my feelings around it? What's my reality check? So is there anything past, present, or future I recognize? And you can be creative with that. It could be, I saw a brochure about Rome yesterday. Okay, so that makes sense. But it could also be like, oh, I feel like at work, I'm actually in a Colosseum. You know, like I feel like I am just in a unsafe environment. And this actually feels like a Colosseum. And then it starts to make sense in that way. Then you can ask a question very directly about yourself. What do you want to know about this dream? And because it's all about like putting your attention, align your attention, and the answers will come. And that's the hard thing in a dream, because it's so like, it goes all directions. So if you go into that world, it's very hard to bring your clarity there. If that works, you bring those worlds together, and then the synergy starts to happen, and that brings the magic in both worlds. So you're starting experiencing things that are fascinating, but also it becomes very practical in waking life, in making decisions, for example. I mean, you know, you don't have to pay a lot of money to ask a lot of people to help you. You just get your own answers. Just get it next to your bed and give yourself maybe a 10-day challenge. Like, can I write my dreams down for 10 days straight? And even if you don't have a memory, write that down. And then at least write down how you feel, or write down like it feels blurry, because then you're training yourself to pay attention to your dreams, and that's the start. And look up Robert Moss, and if you're interested, definitely check out his books.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your story and all that you have learned about dreaming. I certainly enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. Based on where you are right now, what is that one thing that you are grateful for, and how can our listeners find more about you?
Oh, thank you. I'm grateful for this conversation. I told you just before we started, I'm always grateful if I meet sincere seekers who are genuinely on their own journey of like opening the miracle that they are, like let it unfold. And I don't know if you agree with me, but I find it a fascinating thing to be human. It's an absolute trip in a certain sense, because it's ununderstandable what it means to be human, and then it's so deep and it's so miraculous. And so I'm grateful to be in a conversation with you. Thank you. And people can find me on my website. It's my name. So shall I pronounce it, or maybe we can put it in the link or something? Add the link, because it's my name, and people can find me there.
Amazing. Action Tribe, if you enjoyed this session, and I'm sure you did, then make sure that you write us a review on iTunes, because that really helps us grow. Or maybe tell a friend about this show, because your one message, your one recommendation will make a huge difference to that person, certainly, but also to us, because you know, we will get more people listening to our podcast. Make sure that you not just write a review yourself, but you know, tell your friends about this. And if you'd like to join us to have your own personal spiritual journey, then drop in for my next breathwork session from anywhere in the world. As long as you have an internet connection and a pair of headphones, go to my7chakras.com/drop-in. That's my7chakras.com/drop-in. I love listening and watching and seeing and hearing from all our listeners, and breathing together and chanting together and experiencing oneness. So look forward to seeing you there. Once again, Jos, really amazing to chat with you and converse with you and exchange all these amazing, profound ideas about spirituality, but also dreaming and personal development. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners before we part ways?
I enjoyed the conversation, and thank you for doing this work and spreading more consciousness.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at mysevenchakras.com. That is my, S-E-V-E-N, chakras.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.